You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
So you probably know the answer to this, but what do 98 Montana cities, 66 water and sewer districts, 63 towns, 32 state agencies, 25 counties, 16 irrigation districts, 7 water users associations, 4 regional water authorities, and 2 school districts, and a partridge and a pear tree all have in common, minus the partridge and pear tree thing? They all want a piece of the ARPA infrastructure pie. And now there's even a larger pie that they're looking at coming from the U.S. Senate. We've got some numbers here that we've talked about. The first wave of applications for ARPA funding, it's daunting. We're going to peel into that today and more on Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio, from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now here's your host, Tom Schultz.
Waka waka. How you guys doing? Good? I hope you're doing good. It's Thursday, and so we're looking toward that weekend, and we're trying to grab a piece of that feeling right now, but we're at work, and so we're going to dig through that, or maybe we're at home or wherever we are, and wherever you are. Thank you so much for making us a part of your Montana morning. For how long? 2 decades strong, working on 3, that objective perspective, Voices of Montana, and Tom Schultz alongside. So I've been looking at this for a while because I scratch my head about infrastructure. And I know a lot of people do. How critical is the need in Montana? That's just one simple question. I was just aghast at 320 applications from the governor's or to the governor's office for funding through that federal ARPA program. It was another stimulus program that Congress passed just this year. The total amount of funding requested would twice exceed what is available through that program. What does that tell you? It tells you we have a problem. It tells you maybe that we're behind the eight ball on meeting our infrastructure needs. Now, I think that you probably can maybe absorb that a little bit in terms of, I get it. Infrastructure is expensive. It's hard to get consensus on these things. Everybody wants a piece of that pie. But this number here for me is a very, very large number and very indicative of several problems that we have when it comes to funding infrastructure. And I want to talk about that. I want to talk with Daryl James, Executive Director of the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. And I want Daryl to help us sort out the need in Montana and how we maybe those broader questions got behind the eight ball on this. And Daryl is with us. Good morning, Daryl. How you doing?
Good morning, Tom. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me this morning.
Yeah, I appreciate you being here. I have been kind of gearing toward this for a little while because I know that there's infrastructure needs out there. I want to, as much as you can, because there were 320 applications, as I mentioned, 98 Montana cities, the 66 water and sewer districts. As executive director of the MIC, the Montana Infrastructure Coalition, you probably got an idea of what some of those projects are. But let's start with the broader question about how we get behind the eight ball so much on meeting our infrastructure needs. Isn't this a huge red flag for that?
Absolutely, Tom, but it's not something that that should come as a surprise to many of our lawmakers. We've been talking about this for 5 or 6 years now up at the Capitol, but it's something that that folks that are involved in infrastructure, which is not real sexy or interesting to a lot of folks until their water doesn't work or the lights don't turn on, right? We just don't think about it. But it's slow incremental decline in the age and the function and the funding streams, frankly, for critical infrastructure.
Go ahead and peel into that, because that's, you know, the funding stream is one thing. Let's go back here to where something that I saw on your website, and I'm sorry, I left it on my desk. Address for the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. Just go there. You'll find it. You put out there, but as a long-term strategy for economic stability and the general health and well-being of our communities across Montana. Where is this long-term strategy? Why is it so hard to get a long-term strategy for infrastructure?
Well, Tom, if you think about the way we developed, even just here in Montana, most of our critical infrastructure, and I'll back up and explain that in a minute, but if you think of our water systems in our communities, most of those were built well over 75 years ago, and most of them built with about a 50-year projected useful life. So the bill is simply coming due on that. But then if you look at ongoing maintenance and operation of those facilities, our tax base has been declining in Montana, and we can talk a little bit about where that money has typically come from. And then you look at the participation levels of state and federal government, and this is a nationwide experience, has really flipped over the last 40 to 45 years, where, you know, there were huge federal grants available for water, wastewater type projects, to where those federal funding sources were composed about 75% of funding for a typical project. And today it's probably less than 20% of funding comes from the feds. So all of that burden lies on the local taxpayer. And in Montana, all of that money comes from Montana property taxpayers. At a declining rate, you know, resource revenues used to fill up a significant portion of that, but we're seeing declines in, you know, timber sales and hard rock mining and certainly coal. Our coal tax trust fund has supplied significant grants for water, wastewater projects, county bridge projects for decades, but that money is declining, and it's been a flat rate over the last 20 years. And so it makes up a smaller and smaller portion of that overall ability to pay for water infrastructure at the local level. So that gives you a little bit of a picture on where we are from the funding side. The burden really does lie with the local property taxpayer at an increasing rate, and the bill is just getting larger and larger every year.
Yeah, that's the interesting dynamic of this as well, is there's less funding, it's more expensive, and then these repairs become critical at a certain point. You talked about Daryl James with us here, Executive Director of the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. It's mtinfrastructure.org. You had talked about these projects or the infrastructure being built 75 years ago to last 50 years. And so that money that we've been able to spend has all, I wouldn't say all, but what's your assessment of that in terms of it's been a Band-Aid approach for everything for X amount of years?
It has been. You know, you think of your rates that you pay for water sewer services, that's basically just for ongoing operation of the system. There's been very little ability to set aside additional monies for improvements or upgrades, and we frankly, just as a society, this is not just in Montana, have been kicking that can down the road, trying to keep that tax burden as low as we can. But now we're looking at significant costs. You know, right now, engineering estimates are ranging anywhere from $25 to $35 million for a small to medium-sized community in Montana to be able to provide an upgrade to their water system. So you think of a growing community, and you can spread that around, but you think of some of our smaller, more rural communities, particularly in eastern Montana, where you've got a flat population or a declining population, and there's simply no local revenues to fund that kind of a project. So those communities take, you know, 5 to 10 years to cobble together enough money to provide those water sewer upgrades. And it's not something they can just avoid because there are DEQ compliance requirements, and the department has been willing to try to help with that a little bit by deferring the timelines for compliance, but that bill eventually comes due, and there simply is not enough local funding on their own to provide those upgrades.
That creates obviously a dynamic that's different than trying to possibly upgrade systems in areas that have seen a lot of growth.
It is different. You think of an area, I happen to be up in the Flathead right now. You think of the growth up in the Flathead area, you think of the growth in Bozeman particularly. And what's interesting there, Tom, is you would think that with all that new growth, there's new money coming in, there's the ability to improve the systems. What ends up happening is you actually have to add on to those systems, you have to expand the systems. But the legislature back in 2000 basically handcuffed local communities on the property tax rates and said you can only increase property taxes by an average, half the rate of inflation averaged over the previous 3 years. So there's really no way for a local government or a water sewer district to even keep up with inflation with that artificial cap on property tax rates. So you do rely on either special districts or other funding sources, higher rates, to pay for those systems. But again, we all inherently avoid that, and we're in this situation we are now where we just don't have sufficient funding. And Tom, that's kind of why we put the coalition together back in 2005. The real impetus was the lack of a bonding bill. We were looking at very cheap rates. There was availability of cash. And the legislature and the governor's office at that time, over the course of three or four legislative sessions, failed to pass a bonding bill that would have addressed some of the state-owned vertical infrastructure, as well as provide funding for water sewer-type projects through a grant program across the state. So what we were looking for as a coalition is to just highlight the need for ongoing, regular investments in critical infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And that's what we just don't have, is a predictable flow of funding so that you can plan 5 to 10 years out to finance your critical infrastructure program. So that's kind of our long-term aim is, and we can talk about what this influx of money does to employment in the economy. But what we really need is just a programmatic funding stream that communities can count on and not just look at a $30 to $50 million nut that they have to chomp at one time. They can start putting that money aside or start doing incremental improvements. So that really is our aim in the long run.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I mean, as you said there, that long-term strategy, so much of our legislation, in fact, this proposed U.S. Senate, they've reached a tentative deal here on a separate infrastructure package, but critics think a too large portion of that $1 trillion funds social programs that are not infrastructure. And I think, as you said, when we see the participation levels of the state and local government go up, traditionally the feds handled 75%. That's the job of government, I think, is infrastructure, a big part of it. And as they funded more and more social programs, that they used that infrastructure pile, so to speak, to fund those programs. So we've got an issue. Programmatic funding streams as part of that long-term strategy. Is that gone? I mean, any of this money that's coming out of Washington, D.C. now doesn't seem to be programmatic, a long stream.
You know, Tom, if you think about transportation infrastructure, it used to be that Congress would easily pass a federal transportation bill. It was just a given. We were going to invest in our highways across the country, and that was an easy bill to pass. Over the last decade or more, we've been on continuing resolutions for transportation funding. Those have been really, really difficult to get through Congress, and it's something that we clearly have to do. But it gets all balled up in politics in the D.C. And it's no different at the local level. You know, we it was a big struggle for us to pass a fuel tax increase in Montana back in 2017. And it had been 25 years since we digested our fuel tax. And so it's really just recognizing that none of this stuff is free, that previous generations built this infrastructure that we've enjoyed, and it's time to start putting money back into it to maintain it.
All right, I'm going to talk a little bit here. Got a breakup coming, and I want to, as much as you know, I know that all those applications we talked about, 320 for ARPA funding here from 98 Montana cities and 7 water users associations. I want to discuss, as much as you know, how critical those needs are, maybe the nature of meeting some of those needs, sewer expansions, things like that. We'll come on back with more. Daryl James of the Montana Infrastructure Coalition today on Voices of Montana. All right, haven't had a chance to look at it a little bit. There, our senators did, and there was a tentative agreement out of Congress regarding a major infrastructure package. We've been talking about that. It's still got a long haul ahead. Initially, there was a lot of concerns about it, and some Democrats were tweeting that child care is infrastructure, and things like that. So this package is apparently a little bit cleaner. I mean, I don't think it includes $100 million for new IRS agents in an infrastructure bill, so at least that message. And I think they got a lot of blowback. Adele James is with us here, executive director of the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. I kind of want to talk about this ARPA funding here. I don't know why I launched into the federal funding. We'll get to that in a minute. But I think Congress got, you know, input from Montanans and from the rest of the country regarding the definition of infrastructure. And hopefully they're getting a little more serious on that. We'll get to that in a minute here, Daryl, or you can just launch into whatever you want to launch into. But I'm looking at this ARPA funding. 320 applications, as I said, that is twice the available. The total amount of that funding would be twice what is available through that ARPA program. How critical? What kind of projects are we talking about here?
So, Tom, there's a couple of great questions that you raise. One of them, let's just start with kind of the what is infrastructure, right? Because when we got our group together, we sat down in a conference room in Billings back in 2015 and asked that very question. Said, what are we really talking about when we say infrastructure? And everybody kind of threw out ideas, and there were 40 or 50 things that you know, everything from roads and bridges to City Hall and parks and recreational trails and fiber optic and solid waste treatment. And so everything that you think about in a community that's basically publicly owned or public-private partnerships in providing as the baseline of a community to provide safe and healthy communities and a stable place to invest and grow a business. And then we started kind of thinking about, well, how do you prioritize this? Because the American Society of Civil Engineers, ASCE, around the country has developed a report card on infrastructure, on the physical state of infrastructure and the ability to fund improvements. And Montana overall scores a C minus on a grade school level scoring criteria on the state of our infrastructure. And their estimates were in the billions just in Montana. So then you think, okay, well, where do we start? What's most important? And as a coalition, we took that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you can go back to your high school sociology course or undergrad and remember Maslow's hierarchy, and at the base of that pyramid was things like air, food, water, shelter stuff, right? The basic necessities that everybody has to have in a society. And we said, what is that essentially in infrastructure? And it really is kind of roads and bridges to connect you to other communities, and it's clean water to make sure that you get a healthy community. So we decided that was going to be the base of the pyramid that we would focus our initial efforts on to make sure we had sustainable funding for road, bridge, water, sewer, stormwater type investments in communities across the state. And that's where we really focused our initial efforts. And then you move up into communications and education and then all the way up to kind of the top of the pyramid, which is more of the amenities like parks and recreational facilities. So that's how we defined infrastructure, and the lower you got on that pyramid was really what we called critical infrastructure that everybody had to have, no matter what size community, no matter where you were in the state, no matter where you are in the world. That's really what you need to be able to knit together a community and provide a safe and healthy environment. That's where we started.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And so let's look at that lower tier. What are some of those critical projects? Obviously, we're looking at water and sewer because that's a public health issue. And I would suppose her and
absolutely,
yeah.
And it's specifically articulated in this the ARPA monies. The state of Montana will get a little over $900 million in discretionary funds from Treasury. We got about $453 million this year, and the indication is that we'll get the other half sometime next year. Of that $900 million, about $400 million is for "quote unquote" infrastructure, and about $150 million of that is for water, wastewater. And as you indicated, there's 320 applications. I think those total almost $1 billion just in water, wastewater applications. We talked about, is there a need? Clearly, there's a need. And you asked the important question on is it a critical need? Is it a now need? Or is it a, you know, within the next 20 years, we probably ought to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that varies around the state, obviously. But, you know, more and more around the country, we're seeing bridge failures. We're seeing water treatment system failures. You know, Flint, Michigan was a huge issue. So these are budding issues that that we want to try to avoid a critical failure. But I really think that when we look at the billions of dollars in need and the $1 billion in applications, those are pretty immediate needs. These aren't things that could be punted out there, you know, even 10 years. We're looking at a significant bill coming due.
Yeah, and I want to take a break here. I got some headlines upcoming, and then maybe you can paint the picture of some of those things that you know about that have come across your desk. I assume some of those are going to be in those applications from 63 towns and 98 Montana cities, and I don't know what the difference is there, water and sewer districts. So maybe we could paint the picture specifically on that. Executive Director of the Montana Infrastructure Coalition, Daryl James, is with us here. The list of projects is growing. Infrastructure needs in Montana, which ones are very, very critical at this point? We'll explore that next. Daryl James, Executive Director of the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. So, Daryl, what do you know specifically about some of these projects, and you know, where's it failing out there that we absolutely, really, really have to address right now?
So, you know, Tom, I think you can look across the state and see. I think just about every county, there may have been two or three that did not compose either a city or the county itself or a water district in that county that put in an application. And as I looked at the list, I think the top, guess what was it? Gallatin and Yellowstone, Flathead, Missoula, Glacier counties. I think the applications that came in from those areas, not just the counties, but the districts within them, mm-hmm. their applications totaled over $350 million, just those alone. I was talking with the city manager in Billings this morning and asked what they had on the list. And you have to think back just within the last 5 years or so, they spent $75 million on a wastewater treatment plant, another $40 million on a water treatment plant, and they have a $140 million application in right now for a water plant and reservoir in Billings. So, you know, many of these are going to be small. I say small, but again, a $25 million wastewater treatment plant in a smaller community, up to $140 million in Billings for water upgrades that they need in a growing community. So they're really going to run the gamut on size, scale, and cost. But I think, Tom, it's interesting what this type of funding is doing to Montana's economy, to the cost of labor and materials in Montana, and it really does shine a light on the need for, again, sustainable, predictable funding rather than these huge tranches of money that come through and thinking that this is how we ought to fund infrastructure.
I want to get to that, too, because on the other side of a break, and we still got a couple of minutes before that, you know, right now we're looking at supply chain issues, or we're looking at labor issues, and so that puts a cog in, you know, if they're going to dump a bunch of money into our economy for this purpose, you're going to see even more inflation. I worry about that, and I know that you guys deal with that on a certain basis. In just about a minute and a half here, I remember working with some officials regarding the Dry Prairie water system. That was a huge, infrastructure project. Do we have some of those that we're looking to fund? Because that took years and years to get accomplished.
You know, there will be money available in the overall infrastructure package. It won't be in these grants that we're talking about right now. Those are largely water wastewater projects.
Okay.
But certainly some of the rural irrigation projects, the rural water projects, will be eligible for some of the infrastructure funding out of that $400 million pot. Those have been longstanding needs, again, heavily reliant on federal grants. Some of those have been out there, as you well know, 10, 20 years trying to cobble together funding for those projects. But interestingly, again, I was talking with the city manager in Billings, and he was talking about a ditch system in the city of Billings that's nearing 100 years old. And I think he told me they spent $500,000 this past year just trying to kind of clean that up to avoid flooding in downtown Billings from a 100-year-old ditch system. So, you know, again, some of these things that we just take for granted, don't think much about because it's always been there, it's always worked, but they're reaching the end of their useful life, and we got to start paying the bill on those things.
It's always a matter of priorities and politics, and that changes over time. But if we are, you know, honestly, this far behind, I guess that's my assessment, that raises that priority level, I would hope, for both Democrats and Republicans, and we can stop playing politics about it. There's some indications that might be the case. We'll talk about that with Daryl James as we come on back with more of Voices.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today.
A lot of indications we are behind the eight ball on meeting our infrastructure needs, not just in Montana, but safe to say across the country. Discussing that today, Daryl James, Executive Director of the Montana Infrastructure Coalition, and Tom Schultz alongside. Hope you're doing great today. And again, appreciate you being here. Let me just give you a little bit of what's been released. And Daryl, this might, you probably know this stuff, but I want to give it to our audience out there. Just a few earmarks, so to speak, from this. It's now $1 trillion, and it's going to be tied most likely to the $3.5 trillion major spending bill that's going to have childcare and climate change components to that. They say it's not, but the House of Representatives has said it's definitely tied to passing that bigger budget blueprint. Anyway, $100 billion for roads and bridges, $39 billion. And let's not forget that billions of dollars is a lot of money. Okay, I talk about it a lot. I give you examples of how large this amount of money is. $66 billion for passenger and freight rail systems. Amtrak's going to get $7.5 billion to build a national network of electric. That's for Amtrak, including Amtrak. And then there is $7.5 billion for electric vehicle charging stations. There is $7 billion towards port, $17 billion, correction there, $25 billion for airport improvements, and roughly $50 billion for better to better equip communities to withstand extreme weather events and cyber attacks. That's coming from the Wall Street Journal. Some of that's earmarked specifically for Montana projects. A release from Senator Tester talked about $100 million for rehabilitating the Milk River project. We discussed that earlier. There is $1 billion, apparently, to complete all authorized rural water projects through the Bureau of Reclamation. And that includes the aforementioned Forpeck Dry Prairie system, the Rocky Boys North Central system, and the Mussel Shell Judith Rural Water Systems. I think the thing to note there, Daryl, is that these projects are authorized, but they are not appropriated. And so, again, that's part of the politics a little bit, is that, I'm approving this project, but you don't get it funded for years and years and years and maybe never.
Yeah, that's right, Tom. And I actually incidentally worked on some environmental compliance stuff early part of my career, 20 years ago, on that North Central project. So there, again, is a project that has been out there. The need has been established. We're working with treaty issues, and yet there was no money available to turn dirt on that project. So 20 years in the making. And now maybe there will be some funding that will come through to get that thing moving.
Okay, what's going to happen with this funding? I mean, we're already looking at inflation concerns. We're already looking at labor issues. If you try to contact a contractor, they're going to say, I'm a month out on that, or I'm this far out on that. How, if this bill passes and it's still got a hurdle or two to pass, how is that going to affect our economy? What are we going to see?
Well, first of all, if you can find a contractor that says they're a month out, grab them. that's a good deal. Tom, again, I'll stress the need for predictable, reliable, sustainable, consistent flows of funding for infrastructure, because what we are seeing with a massive influx is incredible escalation in costs, the availability of materials, the availability of skilled labor. You're just not going to find folks or the materials to get something done quickly, or even just on a reasonable schedule right now. And it causes me a little bit of concern that we're talking about another trillion plus coming from the feds immediately on the heels of this ARPA money.
Yeah,
because it's just creating additional problems in Montana. Again, when we think about what is infrastructure and what's not infrastructure, you said something about childcare. the coalition itself had discussed over the last couple of years is housing, or more particularly is affordable housing infrastructure. And our answer has typically been no. I mean, that's a private market issue. You know, we don't typically build anything but low-income housing from the public sector. So we just really don't need to get into that discussion on housing. But if you look around Montana right now, if we're talking about needing to invest in infrastructure, needing the skilled labor to build the infrastructure, those folks, even if they were able to move to Montana from someplace else, or even if they live here now, we're seeing such an escalation in the cost of housing, they can't afford to live here. They can't afford to buy a home. They can't find a place to live to even help build that infrastructure. So it's changed our opinion a little bit on how we think about and how we look at investments in affordable housing. And I think even over the last couple of legislative sessions, there have been bills to talk about affordable housing. And my first inclination personally is, are we talking about low income housing? Because that's a different discussion. If we're talking about workforce housing for those essential employees in the community, you know, your school teachers, your doctors or your nurses, your EMTs, your firefighters, your police force, if those folks can't find housing, they're gainfully employed, they have, you know, long-term employment. If they can't find housing, we've got a community issue that we need to start thinking about how we address. And if the private market forces aren't addressing that, then maybe there's a role for the government to step in and provide some incentives or something to address that problem.
It's a huge problem, and one that deeply concerns a lot of Montanans who want their families to feel like they've got a piece of this country, this land that they've loved and have been stewards over for years, and to be able to stay here. And here's the thing too, Daryl, this is not just a list of woes. These are issues that are all tied together, and when it breaks down, it breaks down in serious ways. You talked about this report card, C-, from the Society of Civil Engineers. Is that for our bridges? How are our bridges doing? How are our roads doing? And again, maybe it's subjective from your position, director of the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. You know, what do you see when you look it over?
You know, if you look at the transportation infrastructure, with the fuel tax increase that we were able to get through the legislature back in 2017, we were able to leverage several hundred million dollars of additional funds from the feds. And we also brought in an additional upwards of $50 million that would be distributed to cities and counties across Montana. So our infrastructure report card on roads and bridges has significantly improved over the last couple of years. However, with better fuel efficiency, with more electric vehicles on the road, that fuel tax efficiency is going to decline over the next couple of decades. And MDT is actually already predicting that modest fuel tax increase of 6 cents by 2023, I think, will have already been exhausted within 10 years. We'll be back in the same position where we're not able to leverage all the federal money that's available, and that value for the dollar at the local level is going to start dissipating. So we need a longer term view on how we fund roadway infrastructure. There was a bill this past session that Representative Logie out of St. Regis put forward to look at taxing electric vehicles. We don't have many today, but we need to start looking down the road and thinking, okay, how do we really utilize, for lack of a better term, a user fee for the people that use our infrastructure. And I wasn't going to go here, Tom, but I'll throw this out there. It's a really difficult thing to consider, but I think Montana in the long run needs to start thinking about this seriously. You know, I'm up in the Flathead right now with my family. My son's up here for a hockey camp, but we've been playing the license plate game, and I think we're up to about 38 states, maybe more than that now, that we're seeing driving around up here in the Flathead. And I think about what these users pay for their use of the infrastructure in Montana. They pay a bed tax that all goes to tourism promotion. They pay the fuel tax, which pays for a little bit of their impact. But for emergency services, water sewer systems, any other infrastructure that we provide, the resources that we provide that attract them here, they pay nothing for it. They pay a little bit of a resort tax here in the Whitefish area, but no other user fee. And I think in the long run, Montana better start thinking seriously about a statewide sales tax and how we recover a little bit of an impact fee from the, 12 to 14 million visitors that come to the state of Montana.
Well, I think we are. I think that there's more and more of a political will to get it done outside of the fact that it's a political, football. It's a bomb when you talk about enacting a sales tax. Everybody who's an opponent of you go, look at you raising taxes. But
exactly.
Yeah. And politics is always a part of this. Unfortunately, so. And so I want to come back after a break and talk about, as you guys with the Montana Infrastructure Coalition, 100 industry, labor and trade associations, associate members like the city of Colstrip and Great Falls and Missoula and Fallon County are voting members. And, like Ash Grove Cement Company, Bear Paw Development, a big list, that's working together for infrastructure. Guys are meeting with our delegation. What's the conversation? Are we getting the conversation shifted back to understanding that we just can't spend our money on every whim that's out there? Let's reel it back in to what government is supposed to fund. Let's see if that conversation resonates. Daryl James is with us as we continue with more here from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Might pick up that sales tax discussion here down the road a little bit. We have addressed that to a certain degree on this program as well, to a fair degree, I think, as we look at the changing structure of our, three-legged. It was a four-legged tax structure in Montana, and now it's become three-legged because of resources diminishing. Anyway, I want to get this question in real quick. We're heard in Kalispell, KOFI, 1180 AM. That's where Daryl James is up there to hockey camp. I love that your kids are playing hockey in July. I think that's real cool. Got a call from Pat in Helena on listening on KCAP 950 AM and wants to know about lead in water systems. Is that an issue that we're facing in Montana?
You know, Tom, I don't think it's a widespread issue. I think there are certainly isolated cases. I can't list any of those off specifically, but I don't think we're going to see a Flint, Michigan type of an issue here in Montana anywhere. But a lot of these older systems certainly used lead, and I'm sure there are parts of those systems that are still in place. Just like we've still got clay systems and old cast iron systems that are literally rusted through and exposed to the outside elements. The system is antiquated and in dire need of replacement. There's no question.
Well, and it's interesting, too, that there are two school districts that have applied for ARPA funding as well. And I wonder if that's associated. So we just got a couple of minutes here, maybe two and a half. I want you to go where you want to go with that. But I want to talk about what can we afford now? We got a piece. We got some funding coming in. I don't know that we're going to look at it and set up long-term strategies for it because there's such a gaping hole in a lot of places. What was the coalition maybe going to recommend, or and then get back to that question about what is the conversation with our delegates, and not just Montana but elsewhere, about getting back to core funding principles of government being infrastructure?
You know, Tom, that really is the critical question, and it's something I don't want to leave the impression that the Infrastructure Coalition is all about raising taxes and spending money.
Right.
What our long-term goal with a statewide sales tax is to be able to put downward pressure and reduce property taxes, take that pressure off of the property taxpayer, and start spreading around the cost of infrastructure.
That's good.
But the real question, I had a class in undergrad. It was called Budgeting is Governing. And at the time I thought this is kind of silly and it's really not very exciting, but it really is so relevant today when, particularly in our legislature, we pride ourselves in reducing taxes and reducing spending, but there really is no surgical approach to that saying, these are the things that we're not going to do anymore. We cut funding, but we don't ever say we're just not going to provide that service or facility anymore. And, it's good politics to talk about reducing taxes, but it's probably not great leadership, and it's certainly not good governance to not just explicitly say to a constituent that, you know, we simply can't afford to provide this service anymore. And that's really where the rubber meets the road. It's a conversation that we need to start having here in Montana. If we want lower taxes, there are certain things that either state or local governments are not going to be able to provide. And we need to head up those hard discussions and make those choices. And that's where this gets ugly political, and it's very difficult, and that's why we keep kicking the can down the road.
Some adopt, some agree with that. Others will put their finger to the wind. Is this a wake-up call? I mean, are other states looking at 320 applications in round one with twice as much money as they have to spend?
I think there's no question, Tom. You look at the ASCE report card for the country. Just about every state is in a similar situation as Montana. The cost of labor and materials is skyrocketing around the country, and a variety of influences on that. But the prices are not going down, and we've stuck our head in the sand. We've ignored this for you know, at least a couple of decades, if not longer. And we simply have to reprioritize and decide that, you know, some of this critical infrastructure is a have to do. And what are things that are nice to have, but we can delay or defer or just simply not provide from a public entity
anymore. Yeah. Great conversation today, Darrell. I appreciate that. Pat on the back to all you guys out there working hard to keep Montana going. We'll talk to you later.